Hey, Geekscapist, Jonathan the Podfather here. And when I first started Geekscape back in 2006, it was just a podcast, but then it grew into a podcast network and a community. And the whole plan was to turn it into a production company so we could make cool films and TV ideas and all sorts of stuff for you guys. We'll always be doing the podcast, but right now I want to let you guys know that we're running a Seed and Spark campaign for one of our first original productions. And this is a co-production with Dweeb Darlings and Fonco Studios called Stalking LeVar. It's a continuation of the web series Stalking LeVar. If you go online, go to YouTube or dweebdarlings.com and look for Stalking LeVar, and you guys will find a pretty fun two seasons of this show. We're going to make a short film out of it, but we're going to need your help. So go to seedandspark.com, search Stalking LeVar, as in LeVar Burton, and you'll find our project. Listen, if you can't donate, it's okay. Just follow and share. That'll help us out a whole lot. And then if you can donate, as some of your fellow Geekscapers have, we'd appreciate that too. The campaign's going to be running for a while, so I really, really appreciate you guys checking it out, and enjoy the rest of this show.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are discussing the first movie that Brian has ever picked for the show. So, you know how Stephen King would sue people for putting his name on the front of a movie that was less than good quality? Turns out Clive Barker doesn't have the same type of attitude, because he was very proud to display Clive Barker above The Plague from 2006. Hey, Brian, how about you explain to us, you know, this is your big first pick. What deep thought process went into really trying to impress your co-hosts here?
So, I looked at my DVD collection and I found The Plague 4 years ago. And I never watched it. I found it at Goodwill. I spent like $2 on it. I said, oh, that's an excuse to watch it. And boy, I was not disappointed. It was a great time. So pretty much what they did was they took Children of the Corn, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and Dawn of the Dead. They sprinkled a little bit of Die Hard in there. They added Dawson's Creek and Chad Kroger's alcoholic stunt double, mixed them all together, and then they kind of put it like a strainer in there to let all the good seep out. And then poof, we had a movie. And I had fun watching this
one. I watched this shit in widescreen because I didn't want to miss a single glorious moment if it was in standard vision and it cut off on the edges.
Yeah. I didn't care to know their names, so they will be referred to as Dawson, Joey, and Chad Kroger.
Man, right out the gate, the most dullest dirt title sequence I've ever seen.
Oh, man.
It's just Comic Sans on a blackboard.
Actually, my note is this title font is some My Free Fonts shit. .com.
One step away from just displaying it in Wingdings and let's figure it out later.
Dude, if it realized how shitty it was and decided to go with Wingdings, we'd be good.
That would be good. See, you guys were pretty angry at me for picking this.
Yeah, still am.
I'm not happy.
With the exception of James Vanderbeek, I'm positive most of this cast was just from the local community theater.
And James Vanderbeek was like, I need to method act how to be as bad as the rest of the people in it.
Because I know that he acts better than this. Yeah. I've seen Varsity Blues.
With every movie you guys have picked this month, there's just been a random synchronized dance scene. And when they upped the ante, it was a random synchronized children's seizure scene where 30
God,
kids
so
at once
bad.
Had a seizure in succession. It was beautiful.
Yeah, but
is it over it?
There's a handful of moments that I will actually say Like, I have a couple notes where I was like, all right, I'll give it this. Like, there's like one or two moments where I'm like, all right, that was a well-shot scene. Like, that was a well-placed scene. But for the most part, this movie was bad. Like, I would say this is like bottom five of the almost 160 episodes that we've done for me.
I don't know. I started with Arcade, and I don't think it's as bad as Arcade.
At least Arcade was so bombastic. And this is just...
It's the very movie, vanilla.
Yeah, yeah. What you're missing in your... I will give you that your presentation of what this movie is solid. It actually sells what the movie is more than the actual movie is. And so I'm angry with you for that because people can be like, yeah, I should spend $3 and watch this shit.
Wait.
I have to say though, this movie is missing the reference that I had for it, which is Left Behind. You remember that Christian apocalypse series? This is Left Behind.
Yeah. So the basic premise, because there's not much of a plot.
You can just run through the plot so
fast. The plot's in one sentence. All the children under the age of 9 go into a catatonic state, and every twice a day they get a bad case of the jitterbugs, and then after...
That's how they stay. That's how their bodies are like. You know how in Halloween they're like... Halloween 4, they're like, he's been comatose for 15 years or 10 years, whatever it is. His muscles would be completely useless. And then Dr. Loomis is like, you know, like, he was doing very well last night. You know, that whole thing. It's like that's how they stay able to use
the seizures are just building up muscle.
Yeah, they get swole.
Oh, that's why. I was really upset that they didn't have like a Willy Wonka and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with his grandpa getting out of bed for the first time.
Willy Wonka and the Charlie Factory would have been a really upsetting movie.
Yeah. We're just going to mix these two together.
Well, actually, instead of the grandpa dying, who died in Willy Wonka?
Gene Wilder.
Every child. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's after. But no, if instead in the original book, if it's not like the almost dead grandpa, Charlie dies and then the grandpa goes to Mr. Wonka and is like, make me a new grandson.
Ooh, I like that.
I'll watch that.
Going and never been kissed style. Where he just goes dressed as a child.
You know, well, is that not another teen movie when there's the old lady?
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
God.
What an underrated movie.
Oh, no. Wasn't I just quoting that shit in the group chat with you guys?
I'm like, sure. You quote a lot of things in the group chat. It's hard to keep up with all the reference points.
The woman who's the, like... She's on the L Word, and she's like proto Alison Brie, dark hair, blue eyes, super hot. She's the mean girl. It's supposed to be like
the sister,
because the cruel intentions reference. Yeah. And she goes up to Captain America because Captain America's in that movie, and she's why is it that whenever I tell a guy I can put wherever he wants, he puts it in my ass? And he's like, oh, that is way too much information. And the black dude's like, shit. She goes, oh, no, Jake, too much information would be if I told you that after they were done, I took a huge dump. And then she gets up real close and she goes, on their chest. And that was, I'm pretty positive that was to both of you, not just you. But yeah, I fucking love Not Another Teen Movie, and I'm glad that we got a chance to talk about it now.
So yeah, they after 10 years, they wake up from their catatonic state. And
is it 10 years or is it 5?
10 years.
Oh, because they're like supposed to be 18?
It's 19, so it's weird. It's 1983 at the start of the movie, and then it jumps 10 years. So the whole movie is supposed to take place in 1993, which is like really
weird.
Does
that explain why they have really shitty clothes? Yeah. Like no cell phones and really shitty clothes? Yeah, because this movie was 2006.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. But yeah, so now they come back and it's basically the Brood. That's what it is. They come back as killer children.
The Brood is way more fun because first of all, that's Cronenberg doing actual horror, and the Brood is on my list. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. I listened to Shockwaves 100, and I think Becca was the one who's championing the Brood, and I was like, yeah, I'll rewatch that for the podcast. Like, it was between that and if I was going to do a Cronenberg, it'd be that or not Shivers. Is it Shivers? What's the...
Shivers is his first
one. And it's like not...
I've
great,
never
but
seen
it's the
it,
sex, yeah. The sex STD, the STD that makes you want to kill people or whatever. But I don't really want to revisit that. But the Brood is kind of bombastic, but it's also kind of entertaining. So we could get a good episode out of that.
We'll
see what happens in 2020. I got way more than... I got 2 years before that's even going
to happen. One of my notes early on in this movie...
What's wrong with my baby?
Well, it's kind of mean, but I wrote, if that fat blonde child grows up to become James Vanderbeek, I'm done with this movie. I didn't know what was going on. I was like, there's no way. There's no way that this kid's going to be in a coma for 10 years and wake up as James Vanderbeek. That's just not
James
fair.
Vanderbeek with his long hair face. This was the long hair face. So wait, when was the last...
Here's the thing that's weird to me with James Vanderbeek. And let me pitch this to you guys. He has been in jail for however many years.
Oh, his character, movie. Not reality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His character in this movie has been in jail for however many years. So everything that's happening is like brand new information to him. And I feel like if this is a worldwide thing, that information would have gotten into jail.
Yeah. Was it new information?
He's like, what's the seizure shit? And they're like, oh, it happens every 2 days. Like, he had no clue what's going on.
It's because he was Mr. Exposition. It's they took half of a semester of how to make a movie, and they're like, oh, you're supposed to say it instead of, they're supposed to show it instead of say it. But then they kind of missed the part where you're not supposed to say it and show it.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's just cover our bases.
Yeah, let's explain. He's confused.
I love the part where the dad from the beginning, is that his uncle?
I guess. All of the relationships in this movie were completely lost on me.
Except for the fact that he's like...
related to Joey. That's all I know.
Yeah. And the survivor girl sort of is his ex-wife or estranged wife. Estranged. Yeah. But... he gets out of jail 10 years on, and he comes back to this childhood home or whatever and sees his cousin, I think, who is the chubby kid from the beginning.
Yeah.
And he's like, ugh. And they've done, like, this movie is shoestring budget to the max.
Yeah, dude. I wrote something about the blood in this movie. I said, in 1987, Clive Barker made Hellraiser with some of the most stomach-churning gore I've ever seen in my life. And in 2006, he has red paint.
Yeah.
He has a can of red Halloween for the entire movie.
This is Halloween 2 level bad paint, bad like paint-looking blood. But so he comes and he sees the kid, and all the kids are is they have some like some powder on their face.
Yeah, they look like Dawn of the Dead. Zombies, like, yeah,
like really bad. Yeah. We don't even give them Dawn
the
of the
ones
Dead
in the
zombies.
Background of Dawn of the Dead, where they were like, let's keep them in the back and keep the guys with the purple just, and blue
some,
in the
like,
front.
They put some rouge and some dark around his eyes, and that's it.
It looks like a fucking 1920s like
Dr. Cabinet. Yeah. The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah, like that's what it looks like. Yeah. It looks like gothic films from that time.
Yeah,
period.
But not good.
German
not
expressionism.
Good
it's German expressionism makeup in 2006.
I mean, Van Der Beek, I guess. So this guy, he's feeding his son oatmeal, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, David Wind! Surprise! So he's feeding the kid and explaining, like, more shit that we don't even need to know. And they want me to believe that the dad reads the entire Grapes of Wrath in a night.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
Because that Grapes of Wrath is maximum 200 pages,
no.
Right?
And Grapes of Mice of Men, totally. It's like 98 pages.
Yeah, but Grapes of Wrath is
700 pages.
I'm pretty sure the Grapes of Wrath is a big book.
And it is a big... I tried to read it. It ain't a page turner.
No, you don't read that in a night, and you're like, huh. And I get what they're...
The opening of Lady Bird, they're listening to it on a book on tape, and they said it took them 14 hours. If it takes 14 hours to listen to someone read it to you...
It's going to take at least longer than that to read the shit. Yeah, because you got to take breaks and everything. But, like, can you guys explain to me, it's been a while since I understand the Grapes of Wrath, but it's supposed to be about the Dust Bowl, right?
No idea.
I know it takes place in the Great Depression, and I believe yes.
It's the Dust Bowl.
Like I said, I never finished. All I remember about it is that I tried to read it because I really loved Of Mice and Men. So I'm like, oh, let me read the other like infamous Steinbeck
book.
And I was like, this is really boring. And all I remember is that I then watched the movie, and it's got that whole like wherever blah 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 will be there. Like that whole speech is
that's
in it.
The, yeah, but that's the takeaway.
Like, I remember nothing, and I feel bad. I feel so uncultured that I know nothing about this. Like
we have all read
novel.
A lot of books. I mean, some of us, Brian, have read a lot of books about serial killers.
I've read a lot of Animorphs
and Goosebumps.
All of the
twice.
Goosebumps. I'm on my second round through Goosebumps.
And I've read a lot of fucking Stephen King. I read all of Dean Koontz. If we're talking about embarrassing shit that you've read,
I brought Cell. I'm reading Cell right now.
Yeah, you're giving him way too much credit for reading anything after like Rose Matter. But yeah. Okay,
I'm trying to read all of the Stephen King books, which is going to be something that I can't complete until he dies because he puts out like four books a year.
Yeah, I don't. He's just props to Stephen King.
Every once in a while, they're good.
Yeah, but that's the thing is like he's throwing shit at a wall now because he's just like I gotta write.
Yeah,
but what the fuck was he even talking about?
I don't know.
Oh, Grapes of Wrath. I don't understand what... It's supposed to be some deep reference. Because that's what I'm saying is that they're like, it can't be the Bible. We can't have it be about the Bible.
It's just as good as the Bible. Like, it's borderline... It should just be Catcher in the Rye. That always feels like it fits in everything.
Except that who
you can always be like, oh, well, James Vanderbeek's... Oh, I bet James Vanderbeek's supposed to be the Holden Caulfield in this story.
But, like he's not even charismatic.
It doesn't matter.
You're just, like, putting your finger to my face, like... But anyway, there's supposed to be some sort of grand design between having Grapes of Wrath be this tome that has a double meaning, blah blah blah. But yeah,
there's so many better books. There's so many better books that you could have put in that space.
Yeah, okay, so James Vanderbeek dies, or no, James Vanderbeek's cousin dies after they fight.
Yeah. I do want to point out because before that happens, one of the two things where I was like, okay, that was actually pretty cool, is I think it's synchronized. I can't remember.
Oh, they all wake up?
When they all stand up and uncork themselves simultaneously, it's like, all right, that shot's actually pretty nice.
I was expecting you to say
that's
pretty dope.
I was grasping at straws,
like,
dude.
Yeah, like, as far as this movie goes, I can... Yes.
I said,
okay.
Here's the exact note. Kids standing and unhooking themselves is actually some pretty dope shit. And then,
you're going to say dope.
And then directly underneath it, however, the fight scene that follows immediately afterwards is weak as hell.
Yeah, the fight scene sucks. His ex-wife sucks. His estranged wife. It's just like, I get it, where it's just like women are, you know, sometimes they don't understand. And she's like, you know, you turned your back on us. And he's like, I was in jail. I'm not allowed to come.
I was in jail in 1993. It's not like there was email.
Yeah, I couldn't really contact you.
I also have a note that just says, I just realized this movie put me in a comatose state because I didn't write anything for like 20 minutes. I was just staring at the TV.
This might be the movie that I've done the fewest amount of notes because I'm just like, what can I can't make jokes about this.
So let's talk about, I have this one scene that I wrote down.
Wait, before we go any further. So James Vanderbeek runs to the house because they're awake and he's like trying to save his uncle or something
and his head's been bashed in by a clock.
Yeah. And then his cousin gets pushed out a window by the
Chad Kroger
wannabe. And then he doesn't die and they fight and then his neck gets snapped or something like that or somebody kills the cousin and James Vanderbeek, he like bends over, touches the neck for a second, not even enough to get an actual reading, and is like, he's dead, and he gets up and walks away. I'm like, that's your cousin.
Yeah,
like,
you should care
that's
more
blood.
You should care a lot more. There's a scene that I wrote down that I just thought I wanted to talk about it because it was such a waste of 2 minutes. And it's the scene with the pastor being surrounded by the children, because this is the scene.
Oh, my God. That's when it really feels like Left Behind.
Yeah, because he gets surrounded by all the children and they're like, we got to go save the pastor. And then they kill the pastor. Yeah, the pastor dies and then they just go, guess we didn't save the pastor. And then the movie just keeps on moving.
But the scene when they snap the pastor's neck and it's just that kind of long shot of the kid just sitting there, the wide shot, that's actually a really good shot.
It's like it should be in one of the better Children of the Corns.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I don't actually know what a good Children of the Corn is because I don't love the first one.
No.
It's kind of fun to watch in a nostalgic, like, okay, I want to watch a 70s movie kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I've ever really watched any of the other ones. I've watched pieces on YouTube.
And I feel like the other ones just get more crazy.
There's a sweet part, and I want to say it's number 4. I don't know why that's coming to mind, but there's a sweet part in one of them where they talk about He Who Walks Behind the Rose, and it's actually like a scarecrow monster thing, and it like burrows under the ground kind of like a tremor.
Oh, sweet.
You know, I want to say that's in four.
Is there a part? Because I don't think I've ever watched any but the first one, but I remember the commercials a bunch. Is there like one where like a hose turns into a snake while it's like attached to a faucet or something? Or am I just thinking of The Craft?
No, that doesn't happen in The Craft.
Well, no, the snake's coming out of a faucet.
Is that in The Craft?
Towards the very end when everything's getting crazy.
What movie was it where we saw the dad from The Craft? And it took me like the entire episode
to remember what that movie was. So that's not going to happen.
No, it's all right. So here's a question. So first of all, we meet with Claire. I only know it's Claire because I wrote down her name. Claire and the guy. Claire is like the zombie whisperer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
They do some, I don't know. They have this whole scene where they introduce like eight people in the hospital and just kill them.
Yeah.
There's so many unfulfilled thoughts in this movie. Like, it's very, so I've talked about it before, but there's a comic book called Axe Cop that was written by an 8-year-old kid. Like,
talked about it. I think that was like year one you talked about Axe Cop.
So Axe Cop was that there was a comic book writer, and he was talking to his little brother one time, and his little brother was going on and on about Axe Cop. So he just took out a recorder and recorded his brother telling the story, and then wrote the story verbatim as his brother told it and animated it, and it became like this really popular like miniseries.
So weird.
The thing that's great about Axe Cop is that if you've ever had any conversation with a child, you can tell that it's written by a child because so many ideas are presented and then immediately changed, like right away. Like, it's like Axe Cop had nowhere to go, and then he remembered the secret passageway. It's like stuff like that. It's like the complete opposite of this. Yeah, like it's like someone was like, I have all these ideas, but I don't want to follow through with them.
Maybe they just didn't have the time. I don't know.
Or the budget. They couldn't pay that many people to be on
Dean
set.
Dean Wallace is in this movie.
What?
Yeah, Dee Wallace is the mom who gets killed by the daughter in the church.
Oh.
And I love you, Dee Wallace. I love you to death. I got to meet her at Mania in the spring. Sweetest woman ever. But why was she in this?
There's only one, I'm looking at my notes, there's only one like gore effect that I think actually looks pretty decent.
If it's the thing that I'm going to make a joke about, I'm going to be real mad at you.
Is it when the kid gets shot and he's shirtless, so like he's laying on the ground, there's like constantly blood pulsating out of the bullet hole on his chest?
I don't remember.
I think it was because at that point I was just like, I can't believe that there's a thing that looks semi-decent in this movie.
The fake CGI gunshot and smoke. They didn't even have a fucking squib or a blank. They literally had somebody hold a fake shotgun and just go bang, and then they added smoke and a blast like after in After Effects, like old school After Effects. This is 12-year-old After Effects.
There's a scene that made me laugh my ass off though, where a character like cocks a gun and then just swings the gun like a bat at somebody's head. I was like,
I believe it's because the gun was empty.
I don't know. I just, to me, I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? It was like a Family Guy joke.
when they broke Chad Kroger's leg.
I have that note.
Screamed more than anyone has ever screamed in a horror movie from like an injury, from a leg injury.
I thought that his leg was ripped off with the level of screaming that was happening.
He was like, now's my time. So when they're going to reset it, because somebody is a nurse, always, is it bad? Is it real bad? Yes, guy, this movie is real bad. Is what my note is.
My last note, because we're at the point where I've done all of my notes, just says, I've never felt less about a movie.
I don't hate this movie.
I'm
blasé about it. Like, it didn't fill me with rage. Like, the first 10 minutes, I was like, this is another 130 or another hour and 30 minutes of bullshit. But then I get into the pace of it and I'm like, it's just so mediocre that I can't be upset about it.
This is coming soon to a convention near you. I bought this bad boy, and just like when I bought Wrong Turn 6 and the St. Francisville Experiment, like, this isn't even getting a single moment of sitting on my DVD shelf. This is going to sell box.
It's like I enjoyed parts of St. Francisville. I was apologetic for making us watch it. I hated Wrong Turn 6. This movie didn't make me feel anything.
I think that's what bothers me more, is that, you know, I had gotten to a point where I was like, we can talk about any movie. We're so good at this.
And then we're getting a relatively good episode out of this, but it's just like, you can tell that Brian got 2 hours of sleep in a car.
Well, and I'm like, because I'm like, man, we're doing really good. We haven't had like a 30-minute episode in a really long time. Guys, I think we're going to be having a 30-minute episode for the break.
We're going to pack this shit full of...
Although we're at 25 minutes, so we're actually...
And then we're going to do like a good 20 minutes of what did we watch.
Yeah.
We'll backload it. So there was... I don't know why I have this note, but... I think that this is the way I wanted to say it to you guys. What do you got there? Body of Christ? You want some? I don't know. I think it was after Dee Wallace gets murdered. So it doesn't even matter. I think this is what my joke was. You know, in... Dennis the Menace.
Yes.
Yes.
Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, he's like the weird dude that's trying to kill the Menace.
Yeah, he's eating an apple and he goes, he takes a bite and he sees that weird little kid with the cross eyes or whatever and goes, what do you got there, sport? And the kid holds up an apple. Oh, he's not eating the apple, the kid is. And he goes, what do you got there, sport? And the kid's going, apple? my friends and I used to say that all the time, but I think that was the what do you got there? It was like me doing my Christopher Lloyd impression. So.
I haven't seen Dennis the Menace since it came out on video.
I saw that shit when it came out on video. I was really excited because I was like, oh, this will be fun. I was probably 10 or 11 or something. It's not fun.
No.
The only good part of it is that, and then when he force feeds an entire can of beans to Christopher Lloyd and he farts and it makes the campfire blow
which
up.
Is like a joke that's been done in every kid's movie from 1993.
But it never gets old.
Like, no, even as I'm 35 and I still
you're like laughing explaining the scene. That's what it was like in the writer's room.
Yeah. The 35-year-olds were like, this is gonna be fucking great. So the priest that gets murdered in this in the plague.
Mm-hmm.
He has.
Oh, they're stealing their souls too. That's like a
that's
thing
the
that
whole
just
point
gets revealed.
Is like, he
don't let them get my soul.
Don't let them take me. He's like, I'm not ready. This is the priest gets murdered. The kid puts his hand over the guy's eyes and then cracks his neck or something, and he dies. And that's they've taken your soul if they take you that way. I guess I think it's murder is one thing, but taking your soul is when they get you in the gentle. Hands-on effect. And that gave me a really weird, like, there's a Christian vibe to this movie, but it's so murky and it doesn't make any sense because are they saving them? Are they damning them to hell? I don't get it. Like, are they supposed to be angels? Are they demons? It doesn't matter. But that's – so James Van Der Beek takes the piece of paper that he gets out of the dead priest's hand, and that's, like, supposed to be the – explanation of what's happening with the whole plague. And then he so it's him and his estranged wife, and they're surrounded by kids, and he's like, okay, close your eyes and think of something that makes you happy and remember when we got married. And I'm like, really? You guys are estranged. She hates you.
Yeah. It's not a happy moment.
Yeah. And so
he's just like, remember all the things that I look for, like that I'm happy about.
It makes me happy.
It's like if I was just like,
I can see it in my mind.
It's like if I was like sitting with Brian, I was like, all right, close your eyes. Remember all those times you talked to the guys from Five Iron Frenzy? all of those times that you went to comic book conventions and met cool celebrities? I did none of those things.
And Brian's like, all right, I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to think about the first time I touched a boob last year.
Matt, close your eyes. Remember that time that I found that dime bag in my
pocket? Yeah, so he has the wife... close her eyes, and then the kids take him. And it's supposed to, like, the score of this movie is awful. It's just atonal piano. It's basically like a monkey, like, on a piano. It's so bad, but you know the guy got paid to do it, which really frustrates me. So there's, like, this crescendo.
You don't know that. It could have just been the cat that was running across the piano and, like, got it.
Wow! surprisingly, no cat sounds in this movie. None at all.
No, the sound... cats were the first to go.
Okay,
they went into a catatonic state.
Oh, I hate you.
Oh, man.
Jeez.
So that was the plague from 2006. Anyway, so you should lose your shit about a terrible joke. All right, so he gets taken, and he gives the the explanation in that paper to his wife, and she goes to the house, and it's supposed to be idyllic, like she gets away. And then all the kids come. But it's like, are they going to take her? Or are they going to be like, okay, you can live?
Well, then they just zoom in on the copy of Grapes of Wrath in the back kid's pocket. And that's like your final shot. And I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, either. I don't think I'm stupid.
The wiki page was no help for this movie.
The wiki, yeah.
It's a paragraph to telling you the plot line. But it's like a pitch. Like the end, like the end of the paragraph is like, will they get out? Watch to find out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no, I don't. Luckily, I paid to watch this.
Yeah.
I paid $1.99 on Amazon or something.
I paid about the same for shipping to watch this.
Oh, fucking goddamn.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
So that was The Plague.
So the door's over there.
I'll show myself out.
Hey guys, we'll be right back at that episode in just a second, but I wanted to take a couple minutes, not even a minute, less than a minute, probably about 30 to 45 seconds, I believe, is the length of the instrumental that Scott recorded that you're hearing underneath me. Scott's great. You should listen to all of his music. I just wanted to let you guys know that if you haven't already, hop over to patreon.com/HMN podcast. And if you are donating $5, you can listen to our new bonus episode, and it is on UHF. You can also listen to the back catalog of episodes. We're up to 4 Patreon bonus episodes now. We've talked about Turbo Kid and the Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension and the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man. And this month, as I've already said, UHF. Now, back to the episode.
Do you guys watch anything?
I went to a play.
Ooh.
You are cultured.
I understand why you're like, man, I'm so excited to talk about what I watched this week.
Well, because my boss got me and Jay tickets to Rock of Ages.
Okay.
And
wait, Rock of Ages, like the play that they made a movie with Tom Cruise in?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which apparently is nothing like the movie.
Oh, well, the movie's great.
Oh, okay, yeah, the play is very self-aware. It's very like a parody of Broadway. It's really... really funny. I was shocked at how funny it was. Love the mashups. And it was an absolute cool experience because me and Jay, probably about 10% of the audience was between 20, you know, late 20s and 30s, and the rest were in their like 40s and 50s. And we're in a very weird spot in our country, and I know there's a lot of upsetting, sad things that we see constantly, but to see a room full of people that are in their 40s and 50s and two men kiss on stage, getting a standing ovation, like people cheering.
Wow.
It's like fucking awesome.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You're right. It's nothing like the movie.
Yeah. No, it was a really, really cool experience. So yeah, I'm a play guy now. So
nice. So yeah. Evil Dead, the musical is next on.
Musicals are fun.
Well, I'm going to sip my tea.
You're like, all right, baby, we went and we saw Rock of Ages. Now we're seeing Evil Dead the Musical.
The Evil Dead the Musical is so fun to see live.
I really want to see it.
It's worth it. Even if you just do like a small community theater screening, as long as they have a splatter zone, you're going to have a good time.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to do it unless there's a splatter zone.
So I feel like an adult.
Yeah.
Jay, I see plays now. Leave the crust on my P&J when you make it.
Crunchy peanut butter now, too. We're really straightening things out.
I got ripped a new one for the way I eat spaghetti yesterday by Scott and his wife.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Okay, so here's a fun story.
I'm excited for this.
All right. So the only other time Megan has ever seen Matt in real life was at Monster Mania last year, so 2017. And we were like, it was packed. And I knew it was going to be a mistake to have Megan come with, but she really wanted to support because she's a great wife. And it was fun to have like a, you know, like we listened to podcasts together on the way there and blah, blah. And she made our booth look great.
Yeah, she did.
And then we needed to get some food. And Matt got Chinese.
Yeah, you ordered Chinese.
It took you like 45 minutes to eat this Chinese because it was like you were eating
around the onions.
Yes, that's right. You were eating around the onions. And so Megan was like, what are you doing? And you were like, I'm eating around the onions. And so it took him for fucking ever. And so I think that like set the stage for Megan to be like, Matt eats like a baby. And then
we were talking about spaghetti. And
No. So I was making raviolis last night and you said you don't like red sauce.
Yeah.
And Megan was like, really? And you were saying, oh, it's because of the acid reflux, blah, blah, blah. And so when I make spaghetti, I just put butter on it. And Megan and I just like bust out in laughter because we're like a baby? Literally, it was two
simultaneously they both said it. I was,
yeah.
There's nothing I love more than to mock Matt for being a child, but I fucking love a good old bowl of buttered spaghetti.
When Megan comes back from volunteering today, I'm going to tell her. So I bought Megan a hotel room for tonight so she wouldn't be around for the marathon. And I'm so glad because she would be like, what the fuck is my life? Like, I have both the two Kelly boys in the house.
You think that we were twins with the way that we have, like, similar things. Like,
yeah. You also do the thing where you make eye contact and then really, really quickly, like, turn your eyes. You're like, ha, We've known each other for years. Like, I mean, I haven't known Brian for years.
Difficult.
Anyway, so we made fun of him, but then he enjoyed his dinner last night.
It was very good.
It was, yeah. So maybe one day we can try
to get more garden chickens.
Gardein.
Well, I assumed like a garden burger. I was like a garden chicken.
Yeah, Gardein chicken strips. I asked him if he had enough good boy points to have some chicken strips, and he like did a little hand thing like he was a good boy. How the fuck did we even get on this?
I don't know. Well, Brian made a joke about pasta. Your dog is getting tied up into cables. I watched in the theaters. I haven't been to a theater in a bit, but I went to the theaters and I saw Tag, and it was okay.
It was absolutely okay, as I think how you said it when
I mean, the best way to describe it is if you're a fan of the first Hangover, if you're a fan of the first Hot Tub Time Machine, then you will be a fan of Tag. Like, it's a super.
I loved the first Hot Tub Time Machine, but I have no interest in watching Tag. And it's even got my boy in it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's basically one of those movies, and I compare it to those movies because they are movies that, all in all, the plot lines to Hot Tub Time Machine and Hangover are fairly stupid. But the reason
Hot Tub Time Machine's really funny.
Yeah, but the reason that they're funny is just listening to three or four really funny people have really funny conversations that are situational to what's going on. So the actual game of tag aspect of Tag is whatever, but when it's like, when they're in the quote-unquote war room, where like they all hang out and have conversations while they're high, like that is where they just like Hannibal Burgess and John Hamm and Ed Helms are just riffing and improvising off of each other, and it's fucking hysterical.
They're
like,
all really funny.
Yeah, like that stuff is like what makes that movie worth watching, is just the crazy conversations. There's one line in that movie that I laughed so hard I thought I was going to actually vomit. And it's, there's no way to talk about that line without spoiling like a big twist in the movie.
Don't.
Holy shit. Like, I can't wait until people have seen that movie and we can start using that quote in like day-to-day vernacular, because it's so goddamn
Do you think
funny.
That I could just watch that scene and laugh?
It's a really uncomfortable scene, and that's why the final punchline is so funny.
I don't do that shit. Yeah. I don't like Wedding Crashers. I liked Old School when it came out, but like that we talked about that when you were talking about Arrested Development season 4, right?
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, where I just feel like I'm at the point in my life where life is embarrassing and awkward enough.
Well, I don't mean that it's embarrassing. It's not that it's awkward. It's that it goes really dark. Like, it's a dark joke, and that's what became like super, like, I'm like, oh, I can't believe they're going here. Like, and it like was really, and then they get to the punchline. I'm like, okay, I'm cool with this, I guess. But it's like one of those things where every once in a while I'm like, oh, like, I'm like, man, I'm going to show this movie to everybody. And then like a certain scene comes up and then I'm like, oh.
The movie Tag.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can show this to people now.
I'm going to see it for sure.
Yeah. You will love it. And I actually think Scott will enjoy it, but it would be like a one and done for him. Like, he'd be like, oh, it's on Netflix.
Most movies are one and done.
I didn't want to like that one guy's other movie, but I found it really funny.
What?
Let's Be Cops. Let's Be Cops was much funnier than it had any.
I hadn't seen it yet, so I got to see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's surprisingly a pretty funny movie.
Let's Be Cops.
Yeah, I remember from a couple years ago. I can't remember anything about.
They just pretend to be cops.
Wait, what was that dirty that dirty work joke that you guys were just talking about?
Oh, hello, real cops. all right. Well, that's all I've got. All
right, I got a couple things I want to talk about.
Of course,
about.
You do.
I'm going to keep it real. All right. So, we were in the car. We went to go get a couple things, including. Charcoal briquettes, and after you saw the Dahmer house, and because that's how we roll. And I said, Brian, did you ask if either of us had watched House of a Thousand Corpses recently?
Yes.
All right, and I said no, but I put it on my list for the podcast, and you were like, and Matt was like, really? He was like, I saw that. I didn't understand why, and I said, oh, because. Oh, I didn't tell you why.
No, we got sidetracked.
Okay, so I watched Lords of Salem. I feel like you said something about it a couple weeks ago. Maybe in an off comment.
I compared it to a scene in Silent Night, Deadly Night 4.
Okay, yeah.
It was a reach.
Yeah. I don't know what... I'm assuming it has something to do with the like, Harlequin baby. Or something.
It was just about like the owner of the shop that she trusted the library, and then like, oh, they're all witches.
Oh yeah, they're all witches. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Lords of Salem is super mediocre.
Such
like,
an average movie.
It Sherry Moon actually is not hateable, you know? Like, I don't like Sherry Moon. I don't think that she's a particularly good actress,
yeah.
But I think that is her least bombastic character that she's ever done. And I don't know. That movie is a hot mess as far as like the logic.
So the best description I ever heard of Lords of Salem was Elric on
Shockwaves,
where he said, it's not a good movie, but when I watch it, it makes me think, if this was like a rare film from the 70s that I rented as a kid in the 90s, it would be like one of my favorite movies.
But that's
like,
what Rob Zombie tries to do every time,
that's what he tries
to
do every time. But I think that this was the most successful he's done at making a film that actually does just feel
it
like a garbagey
like
70s film.
But
that's actually why I brought up House of a Thousand Corpses, but I'll let you.
Okay, yeah. We'll discuss House of a Thousand Corpses. I do think that it's time for me to revisit that. It's been like a good decade. I think it's time.
I'm sure we can get a good episode.
We can get a great episode out of the last 5 minutes of that movie, like minimum. So, Lords of Salem was kind of cool. I think that they actually did film it on location in Salem because I recognized a couple spots. I don't know if they did the whole thing there, but there's a statue. It's like a bronze statue that she walks by in one scene. I'm like, yeah, that's. I'm almost positive that I've walked past that because I grew up visiting that area of like Massachusetts and New Hampshire and things like that as a kid every summer. And we would go to Salem all the time. Like Megan and I, for our wedding anniversary, went up to Salem because she's awesome and spooky. And we went to like the witch houses, and we went to the jail. Salem is a really, really cool city, and it's still feels like a small town, like New England town, like a Stephen King movie book could actually happen in Salem still, even though it's pretty touristy.
Yeah.
But don't go in October. It's really, really packed in October. But yeah, Lords of Salem, not terrible. I feel like there were a lot of cool visuals, but the concepts were just... he was throwing shit at a wall. I think he's just like, I want... It was like he wanted to do a music video and a movie. Or like four music videos and a movie.
That was like, honestly, the only thing I really liked about it was the one music video scene where it's just like, there's even like a claymation scene. I think it's when she's being sacrificed.
Oh, yeah. It's near the end. Matt keeps putting Brian like... gets further and further away like this. And then Matt puts his hand on his shoulder and he just comes back like real slow. So it seems like it's just kind of like an LFO sound that we got.
If you can't hear yourself in the headphones, it's not recording.
I'm used to this.
Yeah. So anyway, Lords of Salem, mediocre at best. I will never watch it again, but I'm glad that I watched it so that I had some sort of feeling about his, besides his, like, because I've seen House of a Thousand Corpses. I saw Devil's Rejects in theaters and hated it. I saw Halloween and Halloween 2 in theaters. Was very disappointed.
And I feel like Lords of Salem is that type of movie where you watch it, and even though you don't like it, you're kind of like, I wish Rob Zombie made more movies like this. Like,
right.
Like, takes more chances to do things like this and less 31 and yeah. Halloween movies.
Well, the theory behind 31 was it was just like a...
He has to make something because he lost the Flyers.
Yeah, it's movie. Like, I want to make this movie, and they're like... No. And you're like, all right, fine. You want a fucking horror movie? Here's a fucking horror movie.
Yeah. All right. So, and I want to talk about one other movie that I watched, Dagon from 2001.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Have you guys seen it?
I've seen it.
Okay. I watched it. I started watching it because I thought, you know, I bet that we could get a good episode out of it because it's a Stuart Gordon movie and it's H.P. Lovecraft and it's not ever going to be discussed on the podcast.
Yeah.
It is so mediocre.
Yeah, it's not a great movie. But it's...
No.
It's,
and Mick Garris was... I don't think that he was involved with it, but he was talking about it. Maybe it was when he had Stuart Gordon on.
A lot of people like that movie not... I think people like the movie not because it's a good movie. I think a lot of people feel like if you're a fan of H.P. Lovecraft, it's the one that feels the most accurate to like his tone.
I guess that... This is going to make me sound like a
real... It sucks because we have that anthology rule, which I still stand by, but I would love to do Necronomicon.
It is a really, really good movie. And it's got Jeffy Combs in it with a prosthetic nose. Have I talked about it on the
podcast? You've talked about it on the podcast, and then I bought a bootleg of it at WrestleMania. And I was like, man, this movie's so fucking...
Yeah, I would absolutely talk that.
That's like one of the best anthology films out there, and like no one talks about it.
Yeah. I've never seen it.
We'll save it because I feel like we'll be able to figure out a way to work it into an episode. Episode, well, but it won't
one
be a regular...
full month we'll just do each story.
I bet we can get an episode out of each one because Necronomicon really feels like the tone that Lovecraft's stuff did. I feel like Dagon looks... It doesn't have the tone. In my opinion, it doesn't have the tone because a lot of what Lovecraft does is existential horror. So it's kind of like... He doesn't talk about the way a monster looks. Like, Clive Barker did that shit, too, which always bugged me as a kid because I didn't read Lovecraft until I was in high school. But in junior high and, like, fifth grade or whatever, I started reading some Clive Barker. And he would always be like, oh, it was too horrible to imagine kind of thing. And it's a very Lovecraftian thing. Lovecraft does it because it's basically like you see these creatures that break your brain. And it's about, like, nothing you do can stop... There are forces at play that humans try to stop, but you cannot. So Dagon is based on the Shadow over Innsmouth, I believe. And it's because Dagon is an actual short story, is one of his first short stories. The Shadow over Innsmouth is a much different story, and it's much more about like the cultists of Dagon. And I feel like the movie follows the storyline pretty well from what I remember because it's been a long time since I've read that. I just read Dagon. Because at an estate sale, I found a bunch of these 1960s collections of his short stories outside of the Cthulhu mythos, because Dagon actually lives outside of it. Like, Dagon is separate from Cthulhu. But I think that Shadow over Innsmouth, with the cultists and things like that, it's more about, like, human horrors where they're being turned into monsters and these characters are trying to, like, run away and save themselves. It's not about... in Dagon and in things like At the Mountain of Madness and the Color Out of Space... which was very, very loosely turned into The Curse.
Okay.
You know, The Curse, the original one.
Yeah.
That is very, very, very loose reference to
Wheaton movie.
Will Wheaton. The Color Out of Space is what was the influence for that. But those movies are more about, like, there are forces at play and you're just a victim. Whereas with their cultists, things like Shadow over Innsmouth, it's more you're trying to save yourself from the cultists and you're not really worried about the world at large. And that's why I think people like Dagon, because it's more about that.
Makes sense.
It doesn't really feel like a Lovecraft to me, because the Lovecraft stuff always feels like existential, where nothing you do matters because the world is going to eventually get consumed and everyone's going to go insane when one of the elder gods comes from his sleeping extra cosmic resting, but you know, shit like that. So anyway, if people think that we're uncultured for not having read The Grapes of Wrath the whole way through, there you go. I've read a bunch of H.P. Lovecraft. We just jammed out some H.P. Lovecraft books. So fuck y'all.
Yeah. H.P. Lovecraft and plays and buttered spaghetti. We are culture.
Well, that was The Plague from 2006, as picked by Brian. We know what Brian's next pick is, and I'm kind of excited for
it. I am not against it, because it's very topical.
Yeah, it's topical. It's going to be fun. So that's not going to be for a bit, though. So don't forget to send us some emails, because we're just like a week or two away from Listener Submit It Month. We've got some really good things in the running.
Yeah.
I'm excited this month. Usually I dread these. But
it's because people are like, oh, you guys like bad movies? Here's a piece of shit. And we learned our lesson.
Yeah, we
wrong turn six.
Yeah, wrong turn six is what happens.
But Jack is a very sweet guy, so he's sorry.
He's great. So feel free to email us at hmnpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to check out our website at hmnpodcast.com, and hit up the Patreon. We've got, at this point, we have a pretty good idea of what the Patreon episode is, and you'll hear the advertisement in the middle of this episode anyway. But you can check out the Turbo Kid episode, you can check out the Buckaroo Banzai, the controversial Buckaroo Banzai episode, and you can check out our Wicker Man episode on there. And we're probably gonna have one or two, maybe like little special Patreon only bonus episodes in the future. So
nice,
stay tuned. It's gonna be a really good time, and we will be back next week with one of my picks, and Scott was not happy with it, so we'll see how that goes for me, usually poorly.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.